The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
The following podcast may contain discussions supported by science that may be considered dangerous to some listeners and conspiracy theorists. Discretion is advised.
The Three Down Greencast is brought to you by Lucky Bastard Distillers, Saskatchewan's premier distillery, and by the Pilot Bowens Brewing Company, brewed in the heart of Regina.
Welcome to the Three Down Greencast. You are listening to the internet's only Mamba Number 5 podcast. I am Joel Gasson with John Fraser, as usual, as we have plenty to get to, as the CFL's Ed Hervey negotiation tampering window has opened, and a few things happened instantly.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We will talk about that from a rider perspective in terms of who they've re-signed, who they've picked up, and I guess more importantly, the way it's gone, who is no longer going to be in green and white coming in the next coming season, which I don't think should really surprise anyone too much after a Grey Cup year. These sort of things are going to happen, but yep. We will touch on all that as well as the official end of the Brett Lowther era, and even though they kept us twisting in the wind for a little bit on that one.
He must have had one hell of a game in that hockey game for them to keep him like that one extra day past the bonus.
But well, I'm guessing the paperwork was done beforehand, but they didn't announce it until Monday.
That's probably a very smart PR move, considering, yes, again, he was captain of a charity hockey team. I will miss our annual What the Hell is Wrong with Brett Lowther episode, though. Mm-hmm. As that has become an annual event, and well, this instead turned this season into a what the hell is wrong with Brett Lowther. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we will discuss a little bit about that, I suppose, too, though we may have just done that. but there is some other news in Saskatchewan today that has people talking. You know, it's not the Riders adding a punter to their neg list yet again. That did happen. If you follow some of the sort of bot accounts online that follow the CFL negotiation list moves, yeah, they added a puncher this week, so that's always fun.
You know what? I love the fact that we all clamored to have the negotiation list released, and 90% of it is punters you've never heard of coming on and off the list.
I mean, not entirely, but yeah, we always knew there was going to be a bunch of like nobodies coming on and off this thing all the time, but. It's still good that it's out there. What is maybe not so good that it's out there, and this probably isn't news to any of you listening to us, but it may be. You may recall a number of weeks ago now, at the time, Saskatchewan Rattlers announced that they had undergone management change.
Yes.
And they were basically putting everything on pause for a while. And today, on Wednesday, February 4th, I guess yesterday, technically, they teased a big change coming on today, Wednesday, February 4th.
Yes.
And so we got it. We got the new logo, and we got the new name, which, we'll start with the positives. I think it's a good thing now that the team has described themselves as Saskatoon.
Yes.
Because I think basically every team in this province trying to... They basically think that the Riders' success is built on Saskatchewan. So, like, every team thinks they need to be Saskatchewan. You don't. It's fine. You can be Saskatoon. other than WHL, obviously, because there's multiple teams. But
I would argue that it kind of does work for the Rush, because there's still a pile of people that travel from all across the province.
And like, as like a once a game week sort of thing, you can get a bit of an audience of people who will actually come in for that.
Exactly, but I can assure you that Nobody's driving up from Regina for a Wednesday night at SAS Telcen. Weekend games, absolutely. I'm sure that they had a contingent of people coming up from Regina. But
maybe it's like you happen to be in town, so you'd go kind of thing, right? Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So yeah, they are now Saskatoon, which I think is fine. I think that's great. I think more, as the bigger city in this province, more teams should try to, feel like they're a part of the community of Saskatoon rather than try and be everything to everyone in Saskatchewan.
Yes, dial in, focus yep. in, and focus on the market. Bang on.
But then we got the new name and logo. And they are now the Mamba.
The Mamba, yes.
And the first thing I heard, which a friend of the show, CBC's Dan Plaster, actually told me the news of this first. My first thought was, is their logo Kobe Bryant? Because that would have been kind of funny.
That actually, you know what? That
would have been... everyone is very aware of the connection between Saskatoon and Kobe Bryant.
It's a well-known connection in the annals of time. In fact, it's so well-known, I believe the Tragically Hip wrote a song about it.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. No, it's not. It's a snake, again, I guess. I don't know why they just didn't keep Rattlers. There was nothing wrong with Rattlers. I think it was fine. You could have tweaked the logo a bit, made some other changes, gone with Saskatoon, obviously. But anyway.
Or change the color scheme.
Yeah. There's lots of things they could have done instead of what they actually did. And the logo itself looks like some uninspired random tech company that you've never heard of, that you don't know what they do.
So, like, it's sort of
weird, like purple S snake sort of thing. But I'm like, I couldn't, if I saw that out in the wild without any attachment to what it was, I'm like, oh, that's some kind of like, I don't know, some kind of tech company or venture capitalist firm or something.
I'm just glad they used the team. I'm just glad they use a different designer than the Moose Jaw Miller Express.
Well, I don't think that guy's alive anymore, probably. So.
Or he is with his upside down M's posing as W's.
So yeah, it's it has certainly gotten the province talking today, and I guess all publicity is good publicity. But yeah, if you go read the comments online, you mentioned to me on Reddit that it's not going over that well. And I looked through a few Facebook comments and it's like, oh yeah, the most positive thing I found was someone saying, as long as you win, I don't care.
And that is Saskatoon sports fans in a nutshell right there. Whatever you think of the logo, I like the color scheme. I think the color scheme is fine to switch.
I think there's enough green in this province. It's good to stand out a little bit and do something different. No question.
Agreed. 100%. And not that the Rattlers color scheme was bad. It's just this is I think it's cool. I'm very interested to see what the jerseys are going to look like, because I think that like contrast of black and like the neon purple is going to look really good. And I mean, also announced, I can tell you right now, this team desperately needed private ownership. I know people behind the scenes that were basically holding this thing together with strings and hope. Big ups to Mitch Start, who is, I believe he was their director of business operations. I'm not sure what his title is with the new regime. He is still there, but Mitch was like holding this together with a budget made of like, here's some pocket lint. So having real money behind them is going to be good. Another big thing to me is, they're never... Pro basketball's never going to draw 10,000 people at SAS Tel Center. That's the reality of it. I will say it is a fantastic product. If you have a chance, you should definitely go. But I get it. And you look at other markets across the CEBL, and you kind of aspire to be around that 8,000. But yep. The other big positive is moving games to Mayorless Belcher Place. Your 2,000 people in SAS Tel Center can feel empty despite the great job that the game day people do, the great job that the fans do bringing the noise. But put 2,000 people in a 3,000 seat barn in a nice central location in Saskatoon, and to me, this is going to be a big test for the downtown arena fans, right? Yep. You're basically taking professional basketball,
Barkley agrees,
and putting... Barkley does agree. I'm glad he does, because he likes my takes sometimes. He has to listen to all of them before he comes on the podcast. Or when I'm just ranting. I usually rant to Barkley now. But no, I think this is your litmus test for whether an arena is even viable in Saskatoon. Because if people aren't going to support this team at Mayorless Belcher, a nice central location, easy to get to, tons of bus service. I get it. There's no bars waiting outside for you, but you're going to be a $12 Uber ride from downtown, right? Or anywhere really on 8th Street. So I think this is going to be the test, is whether a downtown arena is even viable. So I like it. I like it going to Maryland's Belcher. I'm a big fan of a lot of the stuff they did today. So, yeah.
Here is the thing, though. We know there's been some issues with this franchise.
Yes, there have been, with some personnel.
Yes. Business ops has been a bit of a mess. There's been, you know, things like that. The players have never been the issue.
No.
What we need to know, what we need to learn, is whether they're going to fix their biggest problem, which I've heard is their public address announcing.
Fuck you. The funniest thing is, I can tell you, nothing confirmed, nothing in writing yet. I have had discussions, so we'll see if the Fraser curse continues for the Mamba. And selfishly, when you're doing public address and you're doing that, like, big pump up the crowd, Rattlers is very hard on the throat. Like, when you go, Saskatchewan, you almost have to growl it out.
You could growl it out, but what you had to do was you need to learn to roll your R's.
Rattlers! Exactly. Why the hell did I never do that?
I don't know. That would have been my first thought, is to roll my R's, but maybe that's sort of French in me.
Here I am, 2.5, 3 seasons as the part-time public address announcer, and I never once thought to roll my R's despite my, I'm just upset at myself.
You'll never get to now.
No, I won't. And now Barkley is going to have to listen to me cry tonight.
That's not new. That's probably not new.
If only he could mix me a vodka at the same time.
So Rider fans may be reaching for the vodka a little bit over the last few days as the legal tampering window opened. And what we learned for sure is definitely that tampering is still alive and well in the CFL.
Oh my God, is it ever. Like,
there was about 12 deals in the first 90 minutes. I'm sure some of them came up organically. There's no chance they all did, though. So
No, absolutely not a chance. And, like, especially, like, some of the big names, there's no way the discussion was not had. And, okay, that's part of my theory as to why AJ Ouellette took so long to re-sign. We'll talk about him more in a minute. But he's his own agent, so it's almost like the team had to pretend that, like, this was a thing that, oh, yeah, totally, AJ, we totally can't talk to you to the start of this window.
Well, you can talk to your own players.
Oh, right, that's right.
You can talk to your own players. But he's still technically under contract with the Saskatchewan Roughriders right now. And now for next year as well, obviously, but yes.
Well, now Barkley's going to hear me swear now, because I'm -2 on the pod already today, yeah. Gas.
Jeez, I mean. So we will get into everything that sort of transpired over the last few days. And a bunch more, but John, for Lucky Bastard Distillers, what's in the glass this week besides sadness?
Sadness and incorrect takes. If I ever write a biography, that's going to be the title. Sadness and incorrect takes. Vodka, lots of it. I found more of those flavor packets that I like the Crystal Light ones. Mm. So today we have a cherry pomegranate mixed with Lucky Bastard vodka, ice, and water. And it tastes like Bernie Kool-Aid, and I'm quite enjoying it right now. And I can blame the takes on, you know, I started sipping on it while you were doing house stuff. And I was waiting for you for 15 minutes. It was sitting there. And I'm about halfway into this thing. And, you know, if I think it's strong, it's strong. So, yes. I'm going to blame that on the being -2.
Sure. Well, we'll go with that.
Sure. Let's roll that.
History does not suggest otherwise that could be the case.
I mean, I did once pick Johnny Manziel to win the... win a Grey Cup, so.
Yes, and Taylor Cornelius was going to lead the Elks back to relevancy.
So what you're saying is I should just stay away from quarterback takes.
Maybe. It's entirely possible.
I'm not going to, though.
For me, that would be boring. Otherwise, I mean, what's the point of us even being here if we're not going to say anything remotely interesting, right?
That's fair. You've got a point there.
Mm-hmm. For me, I have from our friends at Nokomis Craft Ales, the brown ale. Which is basically a stout or a porter, whichever you prefer to pick. And it's nice, light, and toasty and delicious.
It's kind of like a winter beer. That's mm-hmm. the one I've tried it a couple times. And as everybody, all 7 of you that listen know, you know, I'm not a big stout guy, but it is one I don't mind. It does have its spot. So can't go wrong with Nokomis.
And one thing I'll bring this up now because I would recommend you try and somehow. I don't know how, because you're probably not going to be a Giant anytime soon. They're not. So at the Bushwhacker right now, they have their oatmeal stout out. And if you're there, you ask for a mother-in-law, they call it.
Okay.
And it has their oatmeal. It's like half their oatmeal stout and half their Chico IPA in a glass. Oh. And it is delicious.
Oh.
The very first sip I took was like, okay, this is very IPA. This is not what I was expecting. But then I think everything kind of mixed together better. My second sip, I was like, ooh.
Now that's interesting. But see, like, I could even do that with, like, a Black Bridge.
Like, I think you would like it, yeah. I think you would like the concept. Yeah, for sure.
Well, because I do like, I like either kind of lagers or hoppy beers. I like malty beers as well. It's just, yeah, I think it's almost the dark beers are almost more of a texture thing, because I like the cold brew Americano stout, which doesn't have that, like, stouty, it's not Guinness, basically, so.
Yeah.
It's the best way I can describe it. So, okay. No, I'm going to have to give that a try. Or even, I know what to do next time I buy a Black Bridge mix pack. Mix the milk stout in the IPA and see what the hell happens.
Yeah, that would probably work.
They
are probably fairly similar, and the Black Bridge ones are probably better. So,
and you know what? It's funny. It's that is a live tasting I'd actually be excited to do on this podcast rather than Mayo Nog or anything with Malort. Although I did find somehow Malort and gin works. It kind of tastes like a lazy man's Negroni. Hmm. Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised. But I think I might have also had a little weed that night. So I think anything would have tasted good at that point.
You might need a bigger sample size on that one, yeah.
Well, maybe that's another. Next time I get a bottle of gin, we'll do. That'll be another live test. There, we've got my drinks lined up for like the next month here. Yeah. One less decision I have to make. Boom.
One last decision for John Fraser. Many decisions for CFL GMs over the last few days as players moving around all over the place as the Ed Hervey tampering window, of course, opened up.
Trademark and, Greg McCullough.
Mm-hmm, which everyone is now adopting. And Ed Hervey, to his credit, actually kind of giggles about it. So I think that's great.
Oh, 100%. And Greg and I were talking about this the other day. He was kind of the first one to use it in social media, so we will give... I mean, Greg's ego is big enough, but we will give Greg this victory.
Yeah, we'll give him one. We'll give him one victory. Well, I guess technically we've given him two since he was part of our team at the Stadnik Invitational last year.
Yes, we also did bring him to
well,
the
you
pinnacle.
Didn't, but you were, I guess you were honorary member of the team.
I was, yes, which I am, which apparently I'm glad you're not on Twitter anymore, because there might be plans for an episode next week while you're in Costa Rica.
Oh, it made its way onto Blue Sky. The Static Invitational account messaged me on there to get approval, I guess.
Oh, approval? They got to run it by you?
They thought I was the real leader of this program, so it was about whether either of them could go on. I was like, as long as if Dave comes on, he still listens, because we can't afford to lose a listener.
Well, because we know Joe doesn't listen, so.
No, Joe's not on the list, so.
No, he's not. Well, maybe having him on would make him part of the list, so.
Maybe. You just made the list.
That's, yes. Which is funny, I have a pencil and a pad of paper out beside me right now, so I can start making the list of, okay, so people that listen, not Joe. Got it.
Not Joe, yes. Do not listen, Joe. The list, of course, of CFL for agents have also been changing as we transition back yet again. The Saskatchewan Rough Riders, just before the opening of free agents of the window, essentially re-signed AJ Ouellette, as we talked about. They have also, new to the team this year, will be a returner, James Letcher Jr., which I think is a great addition.
Agreed.
No word yet. Obviously, Mary Alford has not been in the news anywhere yet, so I think that says what we need to know about that. And James Vodders, defensive lineman, long time with the Calgary Stampeders, last year with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, coming over to the Riders. And why? Well, I think biggest reason why, number one, Malik Kearney is off to the Edmonton Elks, along with Joe Robistelli. Other losses of note include linebacker A.J. Allen. That one certainly stands out to me. Quarterback Jake Mayer, receiver Tommy Neild, and Sam linebacker C.J. Revis.
Yes. Things could always fall apart, and I feel like after recording, at least one of these deals will fall apart that have left, just to spite us. But I think it's pretty clear that they know that Malik Kearney is 100% gone. I like James Vodders. Again, as a guy that watches every down of Blue Bomber football every year, even recorded. Vaughters, he's basically going to be a straight-up Carney replacement. I know lots of guys are high on Carney, but...
Yep. I mean, he was one of the best defensive linemen in the league last 2 years.
No, absolutely. And as you should be high
and
on
my guess, as I said on CBC this morning, my guess is Ed Hervey essentially presented Malik Carney probably with a blank check, and you can't blame him for that.
No, and it sounds like that's what happened, as he was...
We know how Ed likes to operate in free agency, not just in terms of talking to guys 3 years before they're free agents, but also he loves to spend money on the line of scrimmage, which, hey, it's not wrong.
That's how you win football games.
Jake Ceresna didn't really work out for them last year, but I mean, if you keep going to that well, it's going to work eventually. And ironically, the Elks got better as the year went on, thanks to some other people that were unknowns that they added. But anyway,
but still too with the Elks, yeah. They always seem to especially Ed Hervey has this trend of being like, I want to get one big name, and I don't care what it's going to cost me.
Yeah, I will say I do like their signing of Joe Robustelli, and I think that's one the Riders are going to miss.
Agreed. And Tommy Neild.
Yeah, Tommy Neild. We'll get into Tommy Neild, but I think Joe Robustelli to me sort of leads me into the conversation. The big asterisks we have to put around all of these conversations we always have about free agency. It's easy to sit here and talk about how could the Riders let this guy or that guy or this guy go? It's important to always remember that players have agency in this as well. And yes. This is not to say that every player who left hates the Saskatchewan Roughriders, but sometimes for a variety of reasons, sometimes professional, sometimes personal, sometimes whatever, they may also just be looking for a change themselves. To me, I don't know this for sure. This is pure speculation. Joe Robustelli could have been that guy because he always seemed to get the short end of the stick despite always producing every time he was on the field. Yeah. So I could understand why he may say, I wouldn't mind being back, but I may also take an opportunity to go be a regular contributor on another team.
Well, and especially with the money they gave Keyshawn Johnson, too, mm-hmm. right? You know, you have to think they're going two Canadians at wideout. Keyshawn Johnson's going to be a starter. So that would automatically, even if Robustelli came back, that makes him the fourth guy.
Yeah.
Right? So I get it. The other thing, too, is you see this in any professional sport with guys leaving. It's like they get the ring, they get paid, they win a championship, and it's almost like you have two different mindsets for players, and I don't blame either one, nor am I saying one is right and one is wrong. You have the guys that get the ring and are like, "Hey, let me go get paid." Mm-hmm. And to me, I think that is a bit of Malik Carney right there, because from all accounts,
which I'm guessing, and I'm going to guess whatever the number ends up being is probably fair, because as good as he is, I mean, you can systematically replace everything along the defensive line if you need to.
Yes, especially it is one of the easiest positions seemingly to find players if you have good scouting.
If he were a Canadian, that's a different story, but as an American pass rusher, okay, I'm not advocating that Malik McCartney was easily let go, that they easily should have let him go, but in terms of the availability for replacement, it's a lot stronger than some other spots.
Well, and he's going to have a shorter window because of that, because the second his play regresses, he's in a very competitive position as an American defensive lineman,
right?
So
if Willie Jefferson couldn't knock down passes every three attempts, he would be done by now.
Or have his bi-weekly Willie Jefferson old school game, right? So, and I think Willie Jefferson is the ultimate case that I'm sure we knew the salary numbers. That's a guy that's probably seeing... He's on a lot of commercials on those Blue Bomber broadcasts. I'll tell you that for free.
Technically, you're saying everything on this podcast for free, so...
that's also true, but if I was a professional athlete, I don't think I'd be saying anything for free. I'm sure I would, but it seems like, especially in markets like Saskatchewan, Winnipeg, there's a little bit of tongue-in-cheek money, so... Mm-hmm. And that's another Willie Jefferson. That's another reason why I think a guy stays. But I think Carney is, he understands his career short. Football careers inherently are short. Defensive linemen, American defensive linemen careers in the CFL are even shorter. So
especially on the edge, it seems there's a handful of guys in the middle that seem to last forever, which is mind boggling to me.
Yeah.
Considering how violent the middle of those lines of scrimmage are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The shots you're taking, you're never going to see the highlight reel shot, but just next time you're at a game, any football game, maybe bring binoculars like your dad or your grandfather used to, and just watch the interior defensive line play. It is a slugfest. It makes UFC look like a cakewalk. So like, and I mean, you look at a guy like, why am I blanking on his name right now? Gas, just retired.
Long.
Thank you. Thank you.
The guy who's literally coaching the defensive line this year. Yeah.
But that's what I mean. Like, you look at a guy like that, you know, he spent his career, you know, getting beat to shit.
Yep.
Probably could still play, but his move to coaching, presumably, you know, one of those guys that's been healthy for a big chunk of it. So,
yeah. Well, I think what we're seeing in terms of the philosophy playing out for this team this year, I think most of their pieces on offense, AJ Ouellette aside and Trevor Harris aside, obviously, but quarterback's always a different animal. Most of the pieces on offense are still fairly young, right?
Yes.
The defensive side, especially that defensive line, was a little longer in the tooth. So I think you're seeing a bit of turnover there. And I think you're seeing an organization, especially with head coach Corey Mace, who has a very strong defensive background, being a little more optimistic about being able to fill the gaps that have been created by some of these departures. Now, of course, they still have Jameer Thurman. They still have, you know, Roland Milligan. They still have Devon Campbell. Like, there's all of these pieces that are still strong and still there. So there's still a good core for the defense to build around. But I think, you know, as good as the defensive line was time this year, I think it is a bit of a smart decision to kind of overturn that a little bit, to try and get a little younger and build that out a bit for the next few years.
Well, and James Waters is going to give you 90% of Malik Kearney for probably half the money. So, I, you know, if you're going to re-sign these guys, if you're going to have the luxury of re-signing a Keon Schaefer Baker,
yeah,
you're going to have, and a Keyshawn Johnson, you're going to have to make tough decisions in other places, right? Yeah. I think AJ Allen is the
that's the one departure that, like, surprises me the most out of everyone, just for how glowingly Corey Mace talked about him late last year, how sort of he became a star late in the year, finally, like, deservedly so, probably should have been much sooner. And it seemed like he was much beloved by everyone in that room in the organization, and he seemed like a great character. Like, he did the whole chess piece with TSN in the playoffs, and you thought, okay, this is a guy that's going to be, like, around here for a while, and this is going to be a thing, and then all of a sudden he's off to Ottawa, and you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, out of all the guys, that was the guy I thought for sure was going to be back.
I second it, but I think, again, that's a guy going out and getting paid.
Yep. Which, I mean, fair. No hard feelings about that. Course,
no,
right?
No, and we will both be very, we are not the guys that'll sit here on this podcast and be like, I should have been loyal to Saskatchewan.
No.
If you want to get paid, right? Yep. If you want to stick around and go back to back, stick around and go back to back. That's entirely your prerogative, but your career short, maximize it in whatever way you want to maximize it, right? Whether that's by winning or by getting paid. So, and let's face it, let's just put two and two together here. If you're leaving Saskatchewan for Ottawa, which is a dumpster fire, well, I'm sure there's
presumably
extra
won't be this year. We'll see. Hopefully.
Right. Well, I fingers crossed to finally get some respectability back in the nation's capital. But you'd have to think they're paying, just like these guys are making more because they've won a championship. You'd have to think Ottawa's paying more.
Well, I mean,
to bring anybody
yeah.
into that situation.
And like the cap has gone up $600,000 in the last 2 years.
Right.
And the Ottawa Redblacks have no reason to bring back like 75% of their roster, essentially.
No.
Right. Like, they tried it. They made the playoffs 2 years ago, and that team was okay. Like, they weren't great. And then they tried to run it back, and the whole thing fell apart. So at this point, it's like, okay, even if some of these players are good, there's zero reason to keep them around, because clearly this is not working.
No, certainly, right? So I think Allen, and again, it's because the extra weight. I'm not just saying this because they're both Canadian, but I think Allen and Neild are going to be the ones that they regret the most. Like,
yeah, I think Tommy Neild is a sneaky, very good signing for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Some of the other money they spent, we'll see. Like, obviously, they're great players, but I mean, it's the way they've spent this year feels sort of Edmonton. Like, if you look at the teams that spent big, it's like the Edmonton Elks, okay, you understand. The Ottawa Red Blacks, okay, you understand. And the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. And you're like, huh.
Right? A team that desperately needs to get younger at just about every position.
I mean, they've done a better job, I think, than people give them credit for in some ways of doing that. But yeah. And I think it's just the timing of that is interesting, considering it's a year after they hosted the Grey Cup, when these are the kinds of guys they probably should have been signing last year. But
yeah, like when they said, oh yeah, we're not going to spend up to the entire salary cap because we're not really sure if it's there. So I'm just going to not spend the money, because we know they had the money because they were under last year's preseason cap before it went up. And Kyle Walters was just like, yeah, I'm not going to spend this free money you're going to give me. So, am I finally out of the five-year grace period? I think I'd be mad at my team again.
It's just weird. Like, it could work out. I think they'll be fine. Like, I don't know if they're going to rise to the status of contenders, because I don't think necessarily, at least in year one, signing a bunch of free agents to sort of rebuild things helps you right away. It takes time for it to kind of all come together. But yeah, it's just a weird sort of sense to see the Winnipeg Blue Bombers bunched in with those two teams right now as sort of the most active in this process. You know, it's like, okay.
Well, and again, Tommy Neal being the only Canadian that Winnipeg went out and got and spent big money on too, which is never
Broxton out
sign.
Of BC is, you know, they needed another tackle. Like there's
that's
a good signing too, obviously, but there's nothing sneaky good about that. That's just good.
yeah, exactly. That is just, to me, Broxton was probably
the number one free agent on the board.
And Winnipeg got him, which again, that's never going to be a guy that, unless like football geeks like you and I are watching, that a lot of guys will notice, but oh my goodness, you're going to notice, right?
Yeah, so, it's like when the Riders got Jamarcus Hardrick, it kind of changed the entire situation for the team along the offensive line, right?
Yeah, exactly, and has led to this second great modern era of Saskatchewan Rough Riders football. So, but I think, Neil, and you saw it in the playoffs, you saw it in the Grey Cup, and I get it that this team seemingly has an ability to develop Canadian receivers out of thin air.
All receivers in general, like they just every year there seems to be a guy that you hadn't heard of before the start of the year. By the end of the year, you're like, oh yeah, he's pretty good.
Joe Robicelli. Right,
I mean,
there.
Even like 2 years ago, before he forgot how to catch a football, Sean Bain Jr. was that guy.
He was, and
like,
then he got his NFL
that first year. Everyone's like, wow, what a steal out of Calgary, and then the wheels kind of fell off for him. But other than that, you know,
yeah, no, you're bang on in that. They're good at. This team's always been very good at the Jeremy O'Day era team has been very good at identifying Canadian talent and receiving talent, but I just
it is an interesting scenario that they put themselves in, right? I understand the desire to bring back all of Sam Amelis, Keon Schaefer Baker, and Keyshawn Johnson. And
yes,
if he were available, probably Dante Myers. Like I get it, but the question I've sort of had that's been lingering in my head since all of this sort of happening, like, okay, Keyshawn Johnson, sure, because he's American, he takes a little bit less. There's a bit of a divide there.
Exactly.
To me, the question is signing Keon Schaefer Baker for whatever he's making, let's say between 250 and 300 probably, is that worth losing both Tommy Neal and Joe Robicelli? With the added asterisks of it's entirely possible one or both of them may have wanted to leave, to be clear. That's the thing that could have happened. But is it worth it? And the answer is, I don't know. And that's no disrespect at all to Keon Schaefer Baker. If he plays a full season, which I consider 16 games this year, and puts up the 1,200 yards that he should and everything, you're like, okay, this worked out. This is great. But he's yet to do it, and I am very concerned that there's, you know, availability is the best quality, right? And that has been his biggest stumbling block. And you know that Tommy Neal's going to play. You know that Joe Robicelli is going to play. And you know that Trevor Harris trusts both of them to make big catches and big moments.
Yeah.
So is it worth losing both of those guys who maybe aren't going to light it up for 1,300 yards, but play key roles in your offense for a guy that you're not 100% sure is going to play a majority of the season?
I think the team would be better off with Neal, Amelis, Robicelli, Johnson. I really do. And again,
I mean, like, a Joe Joe's still around. There's some other guys like Nail, you know, they like Dunk Busby Dell. Like these other guys around, but yeah,
there is depth. And that's the thing. There is depth. Like we're not, I think that's the reason why you can you can make the decision they made with Keon Schaefer Baker over the two aforementioned guys is because you do have lots of good depth at Canadian receiver and they've done a great job developing that. But I just, to me, as you said, Keon Schaefer Baker is probably 250, 300 for a guy that is seemingly made of whatever my groin muscles were made out of. Like, it's just, you got to be on the field. And is Keon Schaefer Baker, if Tommy Neal and Keon Schaefer Baker each play 16 games, Keon Schaefer Baker is going to be the better player. And the same argument can be made, Keon Schaefer Baker versus Joe Robicelli. But as you said, what are the odds he plays 16 games? I'm taking the under on 16 games for Keon Schaefer Baker all day long. I'm betting the farm on it, right? Mm-hmm. And you said, too, like, I know Trevor Harris's biggest ability, and we've discussed this, is just, hey, you're open, have the ball. But you're right. We saw it in the playoffs. We saw it in the regular season that Robicelli and Neal were his safety nets. And, in fact, that's a discussion we had before the Grey Cup, was Robicelli being out could have been a major impact, right? Now, the team went and completely balled out and, you know, made, and Davis Alexander was basically playing on one leg.
Yeah.
So it didn't become a factor, but yeah, I think in your hypothetical, I take Tommy Neal and Joe Robicelli over Keon Schaefer-Baker 100 days out of 100.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting story. I don't think it's necessarily a wrong answer per se. Like, I don't think this is probably not something that's going to sink this team and they're going to be terrible next year.
Oh, God, no. No.
Like, it's just, this is sort of the margins of that we're nibbling at right now to try and create conversation around this team is, are these two depth guys worth this one guy? And, like, if all things work out and Keon Schaefer-Baker plays most of the season and Sam Amelis plays most of the season and Keyshawn Johnson plays most of the season, regardless of what happens to anyone else, obviously it's all worth it. Everything's fine. I've been wrong before. I'll be wrong again. I am the first to admit when I'm wrong, and it's 100% fine. But as I said, this is not, it's not a conversation about Keon Schaefer-Baker's ability or his skill. It's just in his availability. And
yes,
he's yet to really prove it in his professional career that he's able to lug it out for the long haul. So, yeah, it's just interesting. And I've from what I understand, KSB really wanted to come back. And obviously that's a factor,
that's awesome,
too. And that's great that he wanted to come back. But sometimes as a franchise, you have to make those sort of tough decisions and say, okay, but, right?
Well, and there's no Kinsman Sports Celebrity Dinner this year to pay him to be at, right? So, so you know it's actual money that he's coming back for. So, but you're bang on, Gas. Like,
and I also understand there are other factors at play. Like, Keon Schaefer-Baker is probably, from what I understand, is like the most popular player on the team and sells the most merch. So that's not nothing, obviously.
Oh,
like,
God, no.
Like, this is very much like if you're in WWE and you want return on investment on your guys in terms of actual money, then yeah, KSB is one of those guys.
No, and bang on. And that is a guy that is, as much as you and I make fun of his terrible interviews, because they are terrible.
He knows when to turn it on and off, no question.
Oh, and he is fantastic with the fans.
Yeah.
Like, my niece met him, and she is just in love with that man. Like, just because he was charming and charismatic and friendly at an autograph signing, like, that's the kind of guys that you need marketing the team. Mm-hmm. And like you said, that doesn't count for nothing, right?
No, but it's not nothing. It shouldn't be a deciding factor in whether you actually sign a player or not, but it does come into consideration. There's no question. It should have.
No,
it should.
No, certainly. And I can tell you, being behind the scenes from multiple sports organizations, that is a part of the conversation when you're looking at, do we bring in this guy or bring this guy back? But I think Neal and Robicelli are both going to be key contributors on the new teams, which is awesome. They both get, you know, more opportunity to play. And I for one, when we signed Tommy Neal, you know, my buddies from Winnipeg are texting me about Broxton and Moxley and Tim White. And I'm like, Neal's
going to
be our
best.
Tim White's
going to drop a bunch of passes again, so.
Well, that's it.
He'll have some big ones to make up for, but he'll also drop a bunch in the meantime.
Well, that's it. But that's it. And I'm like, Tommy Neal might be, well, outside of Broxton, because we just know he's going to dominate, he might be one of the best signings one of the best moves that Winnipeg makes this offseason. I mean, outside of, you know, re-signing Sergio.
Well, yes, of course, naturally. But in terms of new guys they brought in that are sneaky good, it would be Tommy Neal to me, because he's progressed everywhere he's gone. Every year he's gotten a little bit better. And yeah, I don't know if he's ever going to be like a top Canadian receiver on a team, but he's always going to contribute. He's always going to be solid. He's always going to be a guy that you can lean on. I mean, heck, the Riders aren't in the Grey Cup without him.
No, absolutely not.
He made a tough catch in the end zone to win that game against BC.
Yeah, I was so impressed by his game against BC and his entire playoff run, right? So, but speaking of kickers, no more Brett Lowther.
No Brett Lowther, yes.
Kind of predicted could happen.
I mean, I'm pretty sure everyone knew it was probably going to happen. He was due a bonus on February 1st. I think, you know, you saw the year that Brett Lowther had. You're kind of like, oh, yeah, the writing is on the wall on this one, unless he's willing to come to camp with $0 in the bank on his contract and try and earn his job back. There was probably a less than 5% chance that he was going to be back. And yeah, that's professional football. I'm pretty sure Brett understands. I mean, I think he knew probably what was coming, and then that's why these bonuses exist, so he doesn't get strung along till camp, just so he can get cut at that point. It's like, okay, now he's free to do whatever he wants. I don't imagine anyone's going to be in a rush to sign him, but hey, if a kicker gets hurt, it's entirely possible that someone may give Brett Lowther a call, and now he has the opportunity to actually go there before things get, you know, before he runs out of time, essentially. But he had to know it was coming, and I think still good on him to follow through on his commitments with the organization off the field. coming through. It just speaks to the kind of guy that Brett Lowther is, and certainly,
oh, absolutely.
Certainly in that regard, he will be missed, but on the field, it was certainly time for change.
Like, all jokes aside that we were talking about, you know, his performance at the Winter Classic, but...
Because, yeah, like, it easily could have been a guy in a situation after the year he had, the writing's on the wall, he easily could have been like, no, I'm not doing that.
Not only did he
do that, he was a captain of the team still, so...
Yeah, and was out, from everything I've heard, he was out shaking hands, kissing babies, doing all the right things, which, you know, knowing the way these things work, he probably knew he was cut.
Yeah.
So the Riders could avoid paying that bonus. So here you are out representing the team when you're no longer part of that team, essentially. So,
maybe they slid him a few marketing bucks late on his contract last year to make up for that a little bit for this, but yeah.
Or paid the tab at the keg or wherever those guys went after that, because I can't imagine a situation in which a bunch of football players play hockey for funsies and don't go out with having, like, prime rib and a bunch of beers, so...